on Cambridge 105 Radio. With the Cambridgeshire Football Association, promoting football at all levels across the city and South Cambridgeshire.
Hello and welcome along to another 105 Sports special here on Cambridge 105 Radio, providing you with the latest updates on the coronavirus and its impacts in local sport. This week on the show, I catch up with our Cambridge United reporter Tim Armitage to discuss the latest from the EFL, as it looks as though a decision could be made pretty soon on whether or not the 2019-20 season will be completed, and if it isn't, how it will be resolved. A number of reports over the last few days. We also discuss how almost all 72 clubs in the EFL could face severe financial turmoil as the wait for a vaccine goes on as well. Cambridge baseball's season has been suspended due to the virus, like many throughout the local sport calendar. So we caught up with Dan Sewell at the club to talk about how they're putting in contingencies to return. We also review how they fared last season in the British Baseball Federation leagues. We continue to try and bring you the best stories from the local community here on the 105 Sports Special. And this week I caught up with Chatteris Cricket Club's chairman Nathan Brennan as they are looking to make the trip to Canterbury Cricket Club in Australia by virtually walking 17,000 kilometres. And we also hear from Coton Under 10 Girls coach Ollie Phillips about their challenge trying to raise money for the Addenbrookes Charitable Trust by walking the 57 miles to the home of football, Wembley. So welcome along to the show. Thanks very much for tuning in. If you want to get in touch, you can do. Best place to do so is on social media at 105 Sport on Twitter and Facebook. So my name is Ollie Slack. Once again, thanks for tuning in. Up first on today's 105 Sport special, let's start with the U's and mainly the EFL, as it looks as though, judging by a number of reports over the last few days, one in The Athletic, that a decision on the EFL season, the 2019-20 season, could be made pretty soon about how it's resolved. There's a board meeting today with EFL members, and then they'll discuss with clubs over the next couple of days. Delighted to say joining me to discuss it is Tim Armitage. Tim, thanks very much for coming on the show.
Cheers, how are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. How's the last few weeks of lockdown been? It's been a couple of weeks since we last spoke.
Yeah, I'm not in front of the computer with just my pants on now. I've got jeans and a t-shirt on, but I'm not shaving yet, so.
Okay, good. Well, that's a slightly nicer image to have than we had last time. Let's talk about the EFL, the Football League season, because today, Wednesday, the EFL are meeting, the board are meeting to discuss, the situation with the season and how it will end and this ongoing issue over the 2019-20 season. There was a report in The Athletic a couple of days ago the season will be ended. It'll be ended now and the games won't be played, and a points per game method will be the method they use to decide the season. Firstly, how would you feel if that was how this season, the 2019-20 season, ended?
It has ended. I don't know why we're clinging on to the fact that, you know, the season hasn't ended. It has. You know, every football fan knows the season has ended because we haven't been to watch football for so long. So to put it back now in some kind of ending, you know, that it almost doesn't even make sense anymore. Let's just put it behind us, as that's what the coronavirus did to us. It'll go down in history and trivia quizzes everywhere about what happened to the 1920 season, and we all just get on with it and look forward to, hopefully, you know, getting a new season started where, you know, fans can start to get back and watch football. I find most frustrating is that the EFL and the Premier League, they've been talking about it for weeks and weeks and weeks, and, you know, they're arguing over things that they haven't even presented in as a formal idea and a vote. Just put a proposal to the clubs. Just tell them it's over. That's one thing, and we're going to do points per game, or we're going to abandon, we're going to reduce the size of next season so that we can let this carry on into, you know, August, September, October, and over however long it's going to take to actually finish it. But just put some proposals to vote on, and let's get an answer and get on with it, because not knowing and not doing anything is just pointless. I don't understand what's been going on for the last few weeks that we're not already at a stage where we voted on it. Yeah, some clubs will be unhappy about it, but until we can quantify who those clubs are and why they're unhappy and whether they've got any kind of leg to stand on, we're never going to get any further forward. Just put some proposals to the clubs, vote on it, find the ones that want to cause, you know, trouble, deal with those things, and just move forward.
Well, it seems as though from an article in The Sun today that they've said the EFL clubs cannot vote until Premier League chiefs have made the call on their relegation. Of course, then it has a knock-on effect. Does that sound a valuable excuse?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's great, isn't it? I mean, that's the problem, is that no one can move until, you know, the Premier League, who, you know, they're going to be stuck for the longest because of the vast sums of money that are involved in making these decisions. You know, and I don't know when that's going to come to an end, but you just need people. I think to me there's two choices. You either say this season never happened, so, you know, the people who qualify for Champions League last season are in Champions League next season. We tough that Liverpool were doing fantastically well and had already basically won the Premier League, but that's it. It didn't happen. It'll be taken from the record books completely, and that's the way it is. Or you're not. This constant, we'll play these games, we'll do this, we'll do that. All you need to do is finish the season, do the points per game, relegate and promote as you did before, but without the playoffs. And yet there's going to be a club in each league who can then say, well, we did we were sixth and we couldn't get to the playoffs, so, you know, we're going to take league.
Yeah.
Identify who those are. At least you're then dealing with a smaller number of people. But if you're trying to make everybody happy, if you're trying to make this the perfect end, then I suppose the only way to do it is play it. But none of this playing in neutral venues. If you're going to play properly, don't worry about neutral venues and this, that, and the other. One of the ultimate ironies is that given that they'll be playing it behind closed doors, I don't see what difference home or away makes. So in a way, it's kind of they're arguing about stupid things there, because there's going to be no fans to cheer you on anyway. So it's completely irrelevant. But you just need to make a decision. Just get on with it.
Devil's advocate would say, looking at League One here, Coventry City 67 points, Rotherham 62 points. If it went on a points per game, and of course Coventry played one less game as well, those two sides would be promoted. Then in the playoff race, you've got Oxford, Portsmouth, Fleetwood on 60 points, and Peterborough, Sunderland and Wickham on 59 points. That's going down to 8th. And of course only 3rd, 4th, 5th and 6th actually make the playoffs. So there's the devil's advocate that those sides are, hang on a minute, we could have easily catch Rotherham in 2nd.
Yeah, but that's the same. That's the same when the season ends. Normally, is that, you know, there are people who are disappointed because they nearly made it. You know, you can't. It's that you always. Everybody always says it's the form over the season that counts. Now, okay, that includes the whole season. They can always argue that that's what they meant. But if the season can't finish, which I don't see how it can, then you have to take the form over the whole season, home and away, and figure out the statistically best way to apply those games to decide those games. And I think, you know, points per game with the home and away bias is going to be the fairest way of doing it. And yeah, of course there are going to be teams that lose out, but that they might have lost out anyway, and there's no guarantee they would have caught up. But you have to make these decisions, because otherwise, you know, I can still see us playing the 1920 season, you know, in 2021, because, you know, there'll be so many different, you know, and a whole host of problems come up, you know, if we extend the season. You know, do you have to play with the squad that you had when you finished the 2019-20 season? What happens to footballers who aren't involved in that and want to move around? You know, there are just knock-on effects everywhere. You know, what do clubs do about selling season tickets for the next season? You know, if that's not going to begin until January, you know, how's that going to work? Fine if you're a Premier League side, but League Two sides who need the revenue, they need the season to start where they can start getting some revenue in. They don't need to play out the remnants of or at least say what 19 or 18 of the teams in League Two don't need the hassle of a season that carries on into next year with all the grief that's going to cause them. So just end it and just do something. Please do something.
And that really is the bigger issue, isn't it? Let's talk about that next season or the season after, or how the Football League is going to continue playing. Because 36% of revenue is gate money for Football League clubs. And Bradford have suspended season ticket sales themselves. Clubs do really rely on that gate revenue. And if fans can't get into the stadium because, say, there's no vaccine and the government won't allow it, how are clubs going to play football matches without fans on the ground, because they're not going to be able to pay their players?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's So this is the problem. The bigger issue is not, you know, it's the virus is the bigger issue. The end of the season is kind of trivial compared to the problems that are going to stick around, because whatever happens, there's not going to be mass gatherings for, you know, a long time yet. So they're already facing the issue of playing the start of next season. They're talking, I've seen people are saying until after Christmas or whatever. You know, there's still the spectre of, you know, half a season without anybody coming in. But that's not going to happen, because if you play half a season without getting any revenue, a lot of clubs will fold. We already know that there's a lot of precarious clubs, you know, us being one of them, who, you know, couldn't possibly survive doing that. You know, it's just not workable. So these are issues that while we're debating the end of this season, we're taking our eye off the ball about what's going to happen to the whole of the football league, because there'll be League One sides that can't afford to do it. There'll be Championship sides that can't afford to do this. So it's not the lower end of the table. It's a problem that football has about what's it going to do. Forget this season, what's it going to do next season? What's the long-term shape of the football league, the four leagues overall? How are they going to look in a year's time? And we've already seen, people always thought, I think people have always thought that's why Bury was so shocking, that actually a club could go out of business. And I think, the reality is there's probably 10 or 15 clubs, if not more, who are looking at the same kind of problem next, because of what might happen next year.
I think Bury and Bolton, they had obviously men in charge who were probably not football men. Let's be kind about it.
But how many clubs do we know that that's true for? Then are by no means alone.
But in terms of the average salary as well in League Two, it's £1,200. Like we just said before, clubs are not going to be able to pay that without the gate money. Is there a way they could just turn around to the players and say, look, if we play in the next 12 months or so, sorry, you're going to have to ride it out. You're not getting paid.
Well, I mean, they're going to have to, because the choice is you don't play at all because we're not going to be in business. So, again, it's the ramifications that we should be dealing with of what's going to happen to the future of the sport, rather than worrying about what's, the petty arguments over, we could have got more points than this if we'd been allowed to play. Yeah, you could have done, but you didn't because weren't allowed to play. So just get over it. Because, I can see a situation where the whole shape of lower league football will change, because you're going to end up with players who are on monthly contracts with clubs, because they can't, there's no way that they can, they will literally be they'll be playing. It'll be like going back to boot money. That's, we'll be slipping some money into boots at the end of games, because that's the only way they can do it. They can only find some sponsorship. They can play players this month because they've got a sponsor that's agreed to play, even though they're getting no advertising. They can only do it because there's some lifeline that's come down from someone in the club who's got some money. These are the issues that kind of are being completely ignored at the moment, because there are, which club can afford to have 20 odd players on a roster at the moment? The furlough system is all well and good, but it's gonna bankrupt the club if it goes on too long having to make up the money of those players when there's literally zero revenue coming in. So,
and we spoke a little about League Two wages, Championship wages as well. They're running at about 106% of their turnover. How has the Football League managed to get so unsustainable, Tim?
Because they make these rules, fair play rules, and they completely ignore them. And that's the problem. I mean, Sky and BT Sport, they wring their hands and they kind of say, "Oh, what's happened to football, mate? You've happened to football. TV money is what's happened to football. There's fortunes to be made and lost in football, because TV companies are prepared to pay so much money for the rights that it just gets ridiculous."
Do you see salary caps being introduced then?
Well, no, at the moment, no.
Because, eventually.
Nobody's going to agree to that. That's the problem. You can't bring in salary caps. Australia, I used to be a Perth Glory fan and watch the A-League, and they started from the reinstatement of football in Australia, where they used to have the National Soccer League. They moved to the A-League, and from day one, there was a salary cap system in place. Now, owners didn't like it because they wanted to buy the best team and win the league, but it was there from the start. So it's there still, you know, what, 10 years later. So, but you can't just come into the Premier League and say, okay, there's going to be a wages, you know, wage cap here, because they'll go, okay, so let me see, Germany, no wage cap, Holland, no wage cap, France, no wage cap. Oh, well, we'll go over there and all the better players will go somewhere else. So it's got to be a global thing, and it's got to be completely enforced without finding some way of, you know, backhanders or, you know, loophole payments, whatever it is. But football is going to change, you know, as is the entire world as a result of the economic damage that the virus has done. And I think, as I say, we've got better things to be doing than worrying about whether someone gets promoted or not, and they've got to be in their bonnet about points per game is not fair. Start worrying about the bigger picture, because so what, you get promoted, but you're going to be out of business in 6 months anyway. So you're not going to enjoy that promotion for very long.
Certainly not. And lastly, Tim, iFollow, I guess, is the other viable option. We're talking about fans not being able to watch their team because of the lack of a vaccine, and therefore how will clubs be able to get that gate money in? Is iFollow a viable option for them? You know, you pay, say, a match day ticket to get the match online. Obviously, I think the service has got to improve a little bit, but would that be something you'd be interested in?
Mate, I'd crawl on broken glass to watch under a fence a game of football at the moment. So if it came to it, yes. Like, you know, if that's what we've got, that's what we've got. Yes, the problem is that it would have to improve enormously, because I don't suspect they could cope with the infrastructure of doing it. And it's very difficult watching a game, you know, when, especially on telly, where you think it should be, you know, 10 cameras and the best angles. Well, it won't be. It'll be exactly what you see for highlights on on Quest. It'll be one camera and it'll miss the action from time to time because the bloke's not keeping up with play. So, but if that's what it is, then fine. That's what it is. That's what you've got. I think, you know, they're not going to make the kind of revenue figures they want to out of it, because there's no way people aren't going to pay ticket price to watch iFollow. You know, okay, you might get a fiver a game from people and you might get a few extra people, but I suspect they'll still be way under what they would be getting normally for match day revenue. So it's not a long term, it's not like watching it on Sky. if they could do that, then that's fine. But you know, it's a poor substitute, but people will watch it because they want to watch their team play.
Tim, we wait with bated breath to see what the EFL come out with today. Until next time, good to chat to you, and we'll speak again soon.
Cheers.
Cambridge 105 Radio. Sport on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Yes, you're listening to the 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Let's turn our attention to baseball now. And Cambridge baseball season was suspended on around about April time due to, of course, the outbreak of the coronavirus. Dan Sewell joins me now to talk about it. Thanks for coming on the show, Dan.
Not a problem. Glad to be here.
How's lockdown been for you? When I've been speaking to lots of sports people in the area and coaches, etc., involved in local sport, especially those involved in the summer sports, it's been equally frustrating because summer sport guys haven't even managed to get their season started. But how's lockdown been for you?
It's been hectic work wise, sport wise, obviously not quite so hectic. But we're trying to keep everyone motivated and interested, essentially, and make sure they're all ready to go as and when we're allowed to get back on it.
And you told me off air you're working for Royal Mail. How's that been? I imagine an interesting time, sort of trying to get people settling into new rules and regulations and restrictions.
Yeah, it's been a little bit manic at the moment. It's like Christmas every day, essentially, for the past 6 or 7 weeks. I'll be very glad when things start settling down and can just get back to slightly more normal times at work.
With regards to sports-wise, obviously, again, like I touched on earlier, really, a difficult time for anyone involved in sport at this time of year, especially like the summer guys. A bit like cricket in a way that you wait the majority of autumn, winter, a bit into spring, the season's just about to start, and then unfortunately the season got postponed.
Yeah, I mean, we were doing winter practice from mid-January, I think it was. We'd had about 2 sessions outdoors. We had one big session outdoors, and then we were just due to have our first game, our first friendly games of the season, and yeah, then everything got shut down eventually, essentially.
Yeah, what was the official date it all sort of came crashing down? Because I think it was meant to start on April 20, if I'm right, around that sort of time.
Yeah, that the season, I believe, was going to start on the 19th, if I remember rightly. And we actually had to stop when they first put the lockdown, the rough lockdown in place. We had to stop then. We did one session. That was that week where it ended was going to be our first sort of inter squad friendly game for the year, and we just couldn't go through with it. We had to cancel. It was gutting. I mean, we'd recruited really well for all three teams. We had somewhere in the region of 50 or 60 players across the three squads, and a lot of newcomers who were all really looking forward to their first games, and then to see it all get shut down like that was quite disheartening, really. I mean, we're making sure that everyone stays involved. We're all staying in contact as best we can via social media. Everyone will be ready to go as soon as we're allowed to. But yeah, seeing all the hard work go out the window like that is difficult.
And what's been the process for you guys since that April 19th date when the season was suspended? Have the team been trying to really keep in shape so for whenever they're called upon and the season may resume?
I believe so. I believe a lot of the players are just doing their own fitness thing, obviously. I'm quite lucky in that my girlfriend actually plays for the team as well. So when we go out and do our exercise, we can actually go and do pitching, catching, all sorts of various skills that we want to keep going. So that's been quite lucky. I don't think a lot of the team have that same luck as such, but everyone's doing what they can at the moment to stay vaguely in shape, I imagine.
And is it a sport? I mean, I know from playing cricket that if you don't have a number of net sessions leading up to the season and you're out of practice and you start the season out of form or whatever, it can be really difficult to try and wrestle that back. Is that the same in baseball, in that if you're potentially not getting the practice in early doors, it may really set you back when you start the season? Or is it maybe a sport perhaps that you could just pick up a bat and off you go?
I think it kind of depends on the individual for the most part. Everyone loves that good practice and to be, you know, have their hand-eye coordination all up to speed before we start the season and get lots of repetitions in the batting cages. There are a few in that team, though, that I know that they could disappear for 6 months, come back and knock the ball about like no tomorrow. So for the most part, I think everyone will be up okay. At the end of the day, when we all get going again, everyone's going to be in that same situation. So it might be a few weeks where results are a bit strange, but once everyone's back up and going, I'm sure they'll pick it all up again.
And I'm sure everyone will be chomping at the bit to play as well. What is the latest with the season from the British Baseball Federation? Have you heard when potential dates are starting to be looked at? Of course, we're all led by the government as well, but have you heard anything from the governing body about any dates potentially?
There hasn't been anything put out as of yet. I think everyone is still waiting on the government to start giving us the option to do it. I mean, if we can't even get 10 people in a room at the moment, then it's a little bit it seems a bit unlikely to be able to go and start playing baseball, unfortunately. But I think as soon as the restrictions allow a larger gathering, then we'll know a little bit more. With regards to the Royals and the Lancers division, that's something that will be discussed between the captains themselves rather than the league or the federation as a whole. But for the Monarchs, it will be down to when the BBF want to bring it back.
Yeah, let's talk about the Lancers and the Royals then, because I believe they've broken away from the BBF and almost created a separate league for the 2020 season. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. We're trying not to look at it as a breakaway as such. We wanted a more development-based division. I mean, we spent last season playing in the Central, which was brilliant, but there is quite an imbalance between our two teams at the moment because they are still new and still learning, and some of the other teams that were around there. So we just felt it would be a better opportunity for both teams to try and come up with a new idea, a new way of doing it. So myself and the captains from Norwich and Northants got together probably from about October last year and started discussing it. And we managed to drag in 6 or 7 other teams. And we have our own little East of England baseball league now. All about development, all about player, you know, game time, and just improving players as a whole and encouraging other teams in the area to start up. We're all helping 2 new startup teams in Bedford and Ipswich to get going. So hopefully come next season, we could have 9-10 teams in that division.
That will be great to see. And just to clarify, this is a unisex team, a unisex league. There's not a difference in separate leagues for men and women.
No, it's all, as far as I'm aware, all British baseball is mixed gender, unisex. If you want to play, you can come and play. That's absolutely fine.
Just remind us as well how the Lancers, Royals and Monarchs finished the 2019 season.
So the Monarchs had a few problems in the... I think I mentioned it before last year. They had a lot of players that would come from the university teams or the Air Force bases because they play at the higher standard. And it led to the players coming and going and maybe not being as committed as they should be or having other things on, essentially. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, I think they didn't finish 2 of their final games or something along those lines, which was a big shame. But the by the end of the season, the squads are always getting a bit stretched with injuries and people just not being available at various times. So they had a few more problems than the Royals and the Lancers. As for those two, we both finished fairly well. As I said, they're both development teams, so it was always about just playing and improving players with the aim to move them up to the Monarchs eventually. And we, I think, in the grand scheme of things, we had brilliant seasons for where we are in our development.
With regards to the Monarchs for this season, the 2020 season, am I right in thinking there's been a slight change in structure, or at least that's what the BBF website shows at the minute, with the AA League having 20 teams in?
As far as I'm aware, that should have been broken down into smaller divisions that would then play off against each other at the end of the season to go into the overall playoffs. I believe that the fixtures and the designations for those leagues or divisions hadn't actually been brought out by the time everything got shut down. I think the season was still about a month and a half away for them, and it can sometimes be a bit later with the lower leagues because of the ground share problems of AAA and National League teams mm-hmm. sharing the same grounds as other lower tier sides. So it tends to be a top-down approach for fixtures, and then everything gets organised as you go. So when it all comes back, I would assume that there will be smaller divisions for those 20 teams to play in.
I see. So the Monarchs, assuming they are still at that AA level, of course, whether it be in that long that slightly bigger league or in 3 smaller leagues, where do you see their aims and ambitions for the 2020 season?
The Monarchs will always say that they want to win the whole thing. and from what I saw in winter practice, there's no reason that they couldn't do it. They had some amazing players this year, and they were looking very, very strong. It will depend a little bit. I know that a few players were from the university, so some of them, when this all started, headed home. So it will depend on who is available and who comes back as such, but if they have anywhere near the squad that they look to have, then they will be very strong and very much competing at the top of the division.
We'll be keeping across all of that on Cambridge 105 Radio should the season get underway. With regards to the Lancers then and the Royals, Dan, is it very much, again, like you said earlier, just about development for the season, especially in a new league as well, where I guess no one really knows maybe what the standard will be or how it'll sort of play out? Or is there potentially an eye on trying to win something with these sides as well?
The plan was that there will be something to play for. There will be a playoffs at the end of the season. The original plan was to have the winners or maybe even the top two playoff against teams from the West Midlands League, which is another independent division. The winning isn't going to be the be all and end all for this division.
Sure.
But there will be a trophy, and I'm sure that all seven teams in there will be hoping to finish with it at the end of the season. So it will definitely be competitive. We've played most of the teams I've in recent seasons or in friendly games, and it's going to be very, very closely matched, I think, from what I can tell from those games.
And just quickly as well, Dan, with regards to funding, I'm not obviously sure what the current funding state is with the BBF, but moving away from their leagues and almost setting up your own division, does that change anything with regards to funding?
No, not really. I mean, we're internally funded. The players pay stubs for the season, and that all gets put back into buying equipment and paying for ground hire and things like that. Moving away from the BBF for those two teams, it shouldn't really. If anything, it has made it slightly easier for us in that we haven't had to charge anything for the teams entering the league.
Yep.
Because the free clubs, the free captains that started it are also going to be running it this season as best we can. The admin and things like that doesn't really exist other than putting together the fixtures and the tables at the end of the after every week, but financing it hasn't really been a problem. If anything, it might actually leave us a little bit better off with any luck.
But of course, I imagine COVID-19 and its restrictions and lockdown and possibly, of course, we don't want this to happen, but the postponement of this season to next year could have financial implications with players not playing match fees or subs at all for all three sides.
I suppose it could. I mean, we don't have too many massive outgoings, thankfully. You know, we as much as I would love to pay wages, we don't. our finances are reasonably secure in that regard. I would assume that most teams tend to live within their means as well. I can't imagine there's too many out there that are worrying too much about the financial side of it, thankfully. Like I said, we're being internally funded. I mean, any next season, the subs will be coming in again. I don't even think we really took too much this year before this all started. So it shouldn't really affect us too much, thankfully.
Good to hear. And lastly then, Dan, what do you think the prospect of players for this season? Of course, we're all led by the government. We're not scientists, but we're all hoping to have some sort of summer sport. What do you reckon the chances are?
I would like to say that I think there's a decent chance that we'll at least get to play. We've been drawing up contingencies for various states where we can get some form of a season in, whether that's June, July, August, even contingencies for beginning in September and getting in as many games as we can before the weather turns. I feel like that we will get to play, but obviously I'm not in the know, unfortunately. If it was up to me, we'd all get to play tomorrow and it would all be fine, but it's not.
Well, hopefully at some point over the next few months, we'll be seeing some baseball, and all the best for all three sides this season, Dan. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And of course, we'll keep up to date, and I'm sure we'll speak again soon over the rest of the campaign.
Brilliant. Thanks for having us on. Take care. Cambridge 105 Radio.
Sports on Cambridge 105 Radio. Welcome back. You're listening to the 105 Sports Special here on Cambridge 105 Radio. My name is Ollie Slack. Up next after us this evening is Tim Willett with the New Music Generator. That's from 7 until 9 o'clock. But before that, let's get back to the show and talk about the community now. And we always try and bring you the best stories from the local community here on the 105 Sports Special. And this week we're talking about Chatteris Cricket Club, as they are looking to make the trip to Canterbury Cricket Club in Australia by walking 17,000 kilometres virtually. They haven't done it as the crow flies. They've mapped it out, and joining me to discuss it is Nathan Brennan, the chairman. Thanks for coming on, Nathan.
No worries. Thank you for having me, Ollie.
How are you doing? How has lockdown been for you so far? What, seven or 8 weeks have we had of it? What have you found yourself getting up to over the last few weeks? Anything new?
Playing a lot of cricket and football in the garden with the kids, more than usual. So that's a good thing. I believe we're all going to be coming out of this as eggheads or chase champions, quiz champions, the amount of quizzes that everyone's doing.
You'll be an absolute expert on everything. You'll be an expert on everything when you finish.
Yeah, well, let's see. Don't hold me to that. But
let's talk about this virtual walk that Chatteris Cricket Club are doing. In fact, you can tell me what you're getting up to, because many cricketers, I guess, imagine across the community, around the county, are feeling isolated, really, and probably a bit down. They're not able to see their mates. They're not able to play as they usually would do. What have Chatteris been doing to try and bring the cricket community or the club together?
So our secretary, Julie, she came up with the idea. I think she might have seen another local club doing it on Twitter, just trying to keep involved. And she decided, why didn't we do a walk or a cycle, you know, just to get the miles in and keep together. And, you know, is there somewhere we could walk to or bike to or something like that? And then that got me thinking. So I Googled and tried to find another Chatteris out there, whether it's in this country or another country. And I couldn't really find anything. So the next best thing I thought was to try and find a CCC, you know, the same initials as our cricket club, Chatteris Yep. Cricket Club. So again, looking on the internet, and I stumbled across Canterbury Cricket Club in Victoria, Melbourne, in Australia. So I thought, well, let's have a look. Typed in Google Maps to see what the distance was, but obviously it didn't give me anything. So a bit of brainstorming between us all and Julie, like I said, Julie's secretary, and we decided, why don't we do a virtual walk, cycle, run to the other CCC, the other side of the world, basically, to keep us all involved, keep the spirits high, and keep the club community going, if that makes sense.
Yeah, blimey. So what is the, do you know the total distance then from Chatteris to Canterbury in Australia?
Yes, it is 17,000 kilometres away.
Blimey.
Give or take a few, 10,500 miles, basically.
Crikey.
So, yeah, so we set a route out, so we're not doing it as the crow flies. So we are taking in the sights as we go, the virtual sights. So it was, the first leg was, like I say, from Chatteris to Paris. And then from Paris, we moved on to Vienna. Vienna to Bucharest, and then Bucharest to Istanbul, Istanbul to Tehran, and then Tehran on to Mumbai, where we are just about to, I believe we're about a day away as we speak from Mumbai. So yeah, it's all, we've set up an own Strava group. So on Strava, you can join and log your miles with what you do. Or if you haven't got Strava, then obviously you just report in what you've done and the miles and all the kilometres, then they all get tallied up at the end of the week.
So it looks like plenty to go then so far. So you say you're just heading into to Mumbai. So then you've got Bangkok, Jakarta, Darwin, and then into Canterbury. And have you had a decent response from the cricketers in the club? Have you felt that they have really got together and you've almost got that camaraderie back again, even though you're not able to go out and see each other?
Oh, without a doubt.
The players have been great. They've just grasped it with both hands and just took it on straight away, and the competitiveness just come out of them straight away. You know, they're going to win. Who's going to win? We've got, you know, the few groups, the first team, the second team, the Sunday team. They've all got their own little groups. They all want to do well and they all want to win. So they're all, putting in the extra mileage, as you say.
And are Canterbury Cricket Club aware that this is going on? Do they know they're involved at all?
Yeah, Julie, the secretary, got in contact with Canterbury as soon as we chose that as our destination, just to make them aware of the plans and what we were doing. And they've, to be fair, they've been great. They've been following us on social media and liking us, sharing us with all their followers over that side of the world. And I do believe they are going to do the last leg with us from Darwin into Melbourne, hopefully. So they're going to do some miles with us there as well, which is great. And hopefully, maybe, you never know, we might be able to do a little tour down there one winter if we make up for this lost season.
Oh, that's good to hear. Glad they're getting involved as well then. And have you had quite a diverse range of ages involved? Because I noticed, like you said there, you'd opened up to the junior section of the club as well.
Yeah, the ages, they range. Pretty sure the youngest is probably 5-6-year-old out on their bikes, right through the under-10s team, the under-13s team, under-15 team, all the senior teams, and right through to our senior members as well, including the president. And I won't mention his age on air, but yeah, he's still out doing a bit of gardening, his daily walk, and clocking up the mileage and contributing. So yeah, it's really good, really good. Right mix, so it's great.
Well, it sounds like a great idea to get people in the club involved, and like I said, that camaraderie back together. We'll definitely keep up to date the listeners with how you're getting on, and let them know when you arrive in Canterbury. Let's talk about the cricket season then, Nathan. And the government announced on Sunday that you are able to play sport with members of your own household, or one versus one sport with a maximum of one person from another household, as long as you, of course, abide by the 2 metre social distancing. They gave the example of tennis. Now, the ECB have also come out and said they are aware that the UK government has announced changes that affect sport and physical activity. They're expecting to receive further clarity in the coming days, and in turn will share greater detailed guidelines as soon as they can. And they also go to point out that they understand the level of patience that recreational players like yourself have had to demonstrate so far, and know that most will be desperate to return to nets to practice, but they do ask for a little more time before such activity is carried out. And obviously, I imagine the whole club is keen to get back to playing cricket this season, or actually start playing cricket this season. Did you take promise from Boris Johnson's statement on Sunday? Did it provide you more optimism than perhaps you had before?
Yeah, we are a little bit more optimistic, but you know, we've said all along we've had our glass half empty since all this pandemic started, and we've said that if we get any cricket this season, then we'll be very happy, whether it be competitive or just some local friendlies or even just in club games. So we're not holding out much hope, but yeah, it's a bit of signs about the tennis and so on. So hopefully the ECB will get some more guidance, and we'll just take it from them, really, and just keep our ear to the ground, and just be guided by them. And when we can, safely, we will do all we can and hopefully get a couple of games in, yeah.
And obviously the crucial thing with all of this as well is making sure clubs come out of the virus and survive. Are Chatteris in a stable position, you know, where they're not desperate for match fees or subs, etc.? You know, do you feel that hopefully the club will be able to come out of the virus and out of lockdown in a healthy position?
I wouldn't say we're, you know, financially great, to be fair. We rely a lot on match fees and players' memberships coming in, and also rely heavily on the money over the bar, the takings over the bar. So, yeah, we're missing all that. So, we've just got to see and just see if we can get any help anywhere, or whether we can get any games on, and just try and get some money coming back in. But it is a worry. It's a worry for everyone, I believe, in any sport we're at the minute. So, you know, the government are trying to help, and we're open. We're open for options, and just going to see where we can go with it, really. But yeah, it is a worry. Definitely a worry. A big worry.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, part of the ECB's original relief package they announced a while back, the $60 million relief package, was $40 million to the professional game, give or take $20 million to the recreational game. They announced a loan scheme and a grant scheme. The grant scheme is if you can't have a loan, and of course the loan you have to pay back. Do you feel that there was enough in there from the ECB to help clubs out?
Yeah, there was. Yes and no.
We are looking at the grants. We're trying to stay away from the loans because, you know, we don't really want to get ourselves into any debt over this if we can help it. So, yeah, and there are grants available. We're looking into them, seeing if it is something we can do, and just help us out for the meantime, just to get through this all until it all passes over, which is hopefully sooner rather than later.
Nathan, thanks very much for joining us, and wish yourself and Chatteris all the best in this challenge and in your future endeavours as well.
No worries. Thank you very much, Ollie. Cheers, mate.
Sports on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Last up on today's show, let's hear from Coton Under 10 Girls coach Ollie Phillips. Now, Coton Under 10 Girls are trying to raise money for ACT ACT, Adam Brooks Charitable Trust, by walking the 57 miles to Wembley. This is a brilliant, brilliant idea. One of many in the community over the last few weeks that we've featured on this show. Now, Ollie Phillips, a coach for Coton Under 10 Girls, joined Tim Willett on his daytime show on Cambridge 105 Radio on Tuesday. This is the chat that he had with Tim.
First of all, tell us Coton Girls Under 10s. Obviously, well, it's a football team and you're based in Coton. What's the history behind the team? How long have you been doing that for?
Personally, I've been involved with the team and my daughter's been involved with the team for a couple of years, but I think the team was running a year before that. It's managed by a guy called Sam Hain, who runs three of the teams at Coton. It's a very active local team. It's about a mile west of Cambridge. I think they run about 10 teams. This particular team's been going for about 3 years.
Okay, that's good. There's obviously been an explosion in girls and women's football in the last couple of years, and it's great to see that it's filtering down to grassroots level as well. The charity fundraising event that the girls are doing beginning on Friday is raising money for the Adam Brooks Charitable Trust, is that right?
That's correct, that's right, yeah. It's the Adam Brooks Charitable Trust, which is obviously a local charity which raises funds for sort of cutting-edge technology and additional specialist staff over and above what the NHS can fund alone.
Mm. Is there any particular reason why you chose the ACT? Have any of you got links to the charity as such, or...?
I don't think there's any particular reason other than it's a very worthy and a local cause. Mm. And obviously, in the current circumstances, it's related to the sort of on the front line with helping the situation with coronavirus.
Definitely. So what are they doing then? What's the challenge?
So the challenge is to collectively, all the girls, to run 57 miles or approximately 57 miles, which is the distance from the Coton Football Club to Wembley, which is obviously the home of football. So that is the challenge. They've got to start on Friday, and over the course of the week they've got to collectively run that distance. I think we chose that because we felt it was a challenge which they could do collectively and was achievable. Now, some of the girls might find it easier than others, but for some of them it will be a real test, and I think we want them all to be involved equally. So I think on average it'll be about 4 miles each.
Okay.
It will be a test for some of them.
This is obviously good. Well, it's great that you're raising money for charity and raising awareness, but it's also great to keep them fit as well, because I guess, like everything, their season has been put on hold, and they're missing all the exercise that maybe they would have got by being involved with the football. So this is keeping them fit while they're at home.
Absolutely. I mean, there's various reasons for doing it. I mean, one is the fundraising element itself, and we're partly inspired by, the likes of Captain Tom, and more locally, there's a girl who did a Keep You Uppy challenge, raising money for various charities.
Yeah.
But also, the girls are used to training together every week throughout the year. They're used to playing it on Saturdays together. And while some of them will be training individually, we wanted them to have a sort of collective physical endeavour, where they could work together as a team, inspire each other. It's really good for camaraderie, and it helps keep them fit. And hopefully some of them who haven't run will be inspired to keep running, and the ones that do will keep on doing so.
Yeah, definitely. So there's a video that was shared to me, which is kind of like a precursor to this, showing them sort of getting ready and warming up.
That's
so that's available for people to go and have a look at.
As you say,
it starts on Friday. How long do you think it's going to take them to complete this?
We're not sure yet, because we're all logging into a particular Map My Run channel,
right,
and we will see it aggregating over the days. And we're just not sure. We haven't been prescriptive in terms of how many miles each girl's got to run each day. So it'll be interesting to see. And if it so happens that they actually complete the challenge earlier than expected, then we may look to push them and extend it, but sort of one step at a time.
Perhaps they can run from Wembley back home again.
Yeah, that's been suggested. I think one of the mums, whose daughter's been super keen and training very hard, suggests we might have to go back via Wales. But as I say, there's a real mixed group of abilities, and so for some of them, yes, it'll probably be a bit of a breeze, but for a lot of them who haven't really run before, it'll be a test. And
yeah, like
I say, we want them all to be equally involved and do it very much as a team.
Well, it's a great idea. I'd say it's great to be raising money and awareness for a local charity, and great to be encouraging kids to be outside and keeping fit as well.
And I think also the last thing, I guess, the last reason for doing it is, as a group of parents, we're quite a close group, very much sort of inspired by Sam, his sort of dedication and commitment. But we're not sure, you know, how this whole episode will affect our daughters sort of psychologically or what memories they'll take from it. And I guess another reason for doing it is we want them to be able to look back in years ahead, hopefully, when things return to normal, and take away a good positive memory of having worked together to raise money for a worthy cause.
Yeah, definitely. You're one of your daughters in the football team, I understand.
She is, yeah. My daughter, India, is involved. She's a sort of a right winger, attacker, loves it. It's been a great thing for her. She's sort of really given her confidence. She loves it. She's made friends outside. She's not at school with any of the girls. I think sort of probably half, two-thirds of them go to school together. But there's also a group of girls from outside of Coton who play. And it's just great to have a sort of another element, you know, friends outside of school, another group of friends, and doing something healthy and fun together.
Yeah, certainly. Well, it's a great idea. For people who want to get involved with this and give some money towards the charity, you've got a Just Giving page, haven't you?
That's right. It's Just Giving page. It's Coton Girls Under 10's virtual run to Wembley, fundraising for Adam Brooks Charitable Trust. I think we're up to, initially we had a target of £500. We smashed that early on, so we raised it to 1,000, and we're up to about 900.
Brilliant.
So if any of your listeners are inspired to push the girls on and raise money for a worthy cause, it'd be brilliant if they went on to the Just Giving page and donated some money.
Definitely. All right, well, thank you for chatting, Ollie. Good luck to the girls with this, and perhaps send us an update to how they're getting on, and if you do extend it, and we'll do another update next week.
We will do. I'll get no doubt Simon, who's really been the driving force behind doing this particular challenge, will keep you posted. Thanks very much for having us on.
Brilliant.
The time.
No worries. You're welcome.
Cheers.
Take care.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
Take
bye-bye.
Care. Bye.
There we go. That's Ollie Phillips, who's one of the coaches. His daughter, as he said, is in the Coton Girls Under 10s club. And if you want to go and donate, you can go to justgiving.com and search for Coton Girls Run to Wembley. The Coton team is also on Facebook and on Twitter.